If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
I get why you say an S-corp for taxes, but when it comes to litigation and liability-wise, it's the worst thing for real estate because corporations, C-corps, and S-corps have shares. Shares get seized. Shares get frozen. So you don't want to put real estate holdings in S-corps or C-corps or even elect an LLC to be taxed as an S-corp because then you just transferred it into an S-corp anyways.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Brian T. Bradley Esquire is a leading educator and nationally recognized asset protection attorney for high-risk professionals, entrepreneurs, real estate investors, and ultra-high net worth families. Brian's goal is to give you peace of mind, knowing your assets are safe. Brian was selected to the Best Attorneys of America list of 2020, Lawyers of Distinction list 3 years in a row, 2018 through 2020, Super Lawyers Rising Stars list 2015, nominated to America's Top 100 High-Stake Litigators list, and selected to the Top 100 in real estate. He also writes and teaches on high-end asset protection. Brian has been featured as a guest and presenter at various summits and talks on numerous investing, real estate, cash flow, finance, and coaching shows. Brian, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Sam, for having me on, you know, putting this podcast together. And it's going to be a big topic. It's going to be really important. And, you know, like, I'm not anybody's legal guru here. I'm just here to, you know, help you understand some pretty intense topics if you're going to be investing or like have liability. And I think I'm definitely going to be blowing up a lot of the status quo you're told and sold on and clearing up some misconceptions.
Man, I'm looking forward to it. If you can, give us a brief overview of who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so like we're going to be talking about asset protection, and I'm specifically an asset protection attorney for high-risk professionals, high-net-worth individuals, real estate investors. And so I was selected to Best Attorney of America list, Super Lawyer Rising Star, Lawyer of Distinctions, Top 100 in Real Estate, Top 100 High-Stake Litigators. So a lot of, you know, good accolades. And I just got tired of clients coming in after the fact, you know, when it's too late to help them, their lives are just falling apart, wishing that I can help them, you know, avoid some big judgments, you know, right or wrong. And so I transitioned my trial litigation practice into preventative planning for successful investors or high-risk professionals to where they don't have to lose everything they worked for when their world falls apart on them.
You use a term, you called it high-risk professional. Can you define that?
Yeah, high-risk professional is, you know, obviously a real estate investor. You know, the more you own, the more you have, the bigger visibility you have, the more of a target you are. A doctor, you know, for example, you know, real estate agents, but CPAs, lawyers, dentists, anybody who has to carry insurance for their practice or has the ability to be sued, you're high risk. And then higher salaries like doctors, et cetera, also are investing in real estate. If you're just like some of my favorite clients are cops and nurses and firefighters who started funding their own their own retirement through real estate. They don't see themselves as being high risk professionals, but hey, guess what? Now you have an asset where you have a lot of liability potentially coming from. You're high risk. And so you can lose that retirement that you just funded. And so we're protecting them. And really what we're doing is just trying to level a playing field. You know, like we have a broken legal system, you know, it's more of a serving the have-nots on the back of the haves. And a lot of people are just filing cases just to get a payday out of successful individuals. And I always hear from clients like, oh, I'm not a high net worth individual. I'm like, you may not see yourself as that because you bootstrapped your success, but now you have over that 1 million net, which is really easy to hit in real estate. You're talking about, you know, just maybe a couple of properties, you know, from there. And next thing you know, you have liability, a few units, and you know, you're now high net worth, whether you see it or not. So you got to start protecting it. And so what we do is just level that playing field through different mechanisms and legal tools like LLCs or limited partnerships, asset protection trust, so that when your doomsday scenario ever does come, you're in a position now to equalize the playing field to get settlements in your best offer.
What are some of these doomsday scenarios that you're seeing right now?
A lot of the weird ones, like you want, it's stuff that you don't expect. you know, it's not slip and falls. It's a lot of the net, like I always think of it as like a pie chart, and you have the area that you know, you have the area that you don't know, and then you have the area of you don't know what you don't know. If you know something, you don't need to ask questions. If you know you don't know something, you can ask someone questions on how to help you out. Where you see most of your loss in life is those areas where I don't know what I don't know, because you don't even know what to protect yourself against. And so what the goal is, to protect yourself from those areas, which would be like in real estate, big ones, mold issues, and then someone getting sick from that, or in today's modern time right now with COVID, and then you being a landlord or a business owner, and some, you know, negligent transfer of diseases and someone dies, all of, you know, like just the stuff that you don't really think about, and then how to protect yourself from it. You know, you can't really stop a mold from forming in the house, but then if someone gets sick from it and a family member dies, or the whole family gets sick, you know, you're going to be wiped out from there. Or the negligence of your own life, just driving and, you know, getting in a car wreck or something like that. So those are the things that could completely wipe a person out. Doctors, overcoverage lawsuits where your malpractice doesn't cover you, which are common nowadays. Most doctors only carry like $1 million worth of malpractice insurance. What happens if you got a $3 million lawsuit now? Things like that.
Wow. Yeah, those are things that, that most of us don't. I mean, we're so busy, like actually trying to make our businesses work. Mm-hmm. We don't sit around and think about, you know, worst case scenarios, you know?
No, well, I was talking to like John Kasman on another show, and, you know, his thing was great. It's like, you're always thinking about growing, next metrics, return on investments, finding the next deal, funding the next deal. You're always looking to grow. You don't think about protecting it until it's too late. And like we were talking before the show of, I had one client, you know, I think it's like $25 million worth of real estate right now. Made an investment that now he's being investigated for potential fraud, calling me after the fact now, hey, what can you do to help me? You didn't plan on that. You're just investing, you know, investing your money. Now it's just something you may or may not have done properly that froze all your accounts, and you're trying to protect yourself. It's too late. You're too far in the weeds now. You needed to come to me before this happened.
Right. It's like wearing a seatbelt after you got in the accident.
Yeah. It's like, sorry, you're already through the windshield, man. Like now we just got to like pull or push your head through.
Oh, geez, man. Yeah. That's a mess. I would love to hear, you know, I think maybe we talked a little bit about fallacies that you see inside of LLCs.
Yeah.
Then maybe so that's what is being talked about. And then conversely, let's talk about what's not being talked about.
Yeah. So like I like LLCs, and you're going to think like I hate them during this conversation. They're the foundation, you know, like they're not the silver bullet. I think they're getting sold as a silver bullet. Just put everything into an LLC. Or you hear a lot of CPAs when you're starting to out investing in real estate, create an S corp. I get why you say an S corp for taxes, but when it comes to litigation and liability wise, it's the worst thing for real estate, because corporations, C corps and S corps have shares. Shares get seized. Shares get frozen. So you don't want to put real estate holdings in S corps or C corps, or even elect an LLC to be taxed as an S corp, because then you just transferred it into an S corp anyways. So when you're looking to protect your assets, you got to think about it in your worst case scenario. How's it going to hold up when I'm in court being challenged and and I'm going through litigation? You should be looking at protecting it properly and then doing your taxes with your wealth managers for like deferred depreciation, cost seg analysis and stuff like that to make more money than what you would be able to do with through just an S corp passive cash flow system. So, you know, like tidbit number one, like think about, do you care more about taxes or do you care about protecting your assets when everything blows up? That would be the first decision that a client would have to make, because then go talk to your CPA and then they'll go S corp route. Or you're going to talk to me and we're going to protect the assets. Then I'll put you in contact with wealth managers to do the forced depreciation. The next big issue and hurdle I see with clients is, and it's common because they all start off small, create the LLC in their own personal name. The issue is they're all in your personal name. And, you know, first word of an LLC, limited. You know, they're limited. And if you're the, you know, single member or owner of it, once that veil gets pierced, because real estate by its own being held in an LLC is an extension of yourself. You're not operating out of that company. It's a holding company for your real estate, which you're the managing member of. So that's the easiest way to pierce a corporate veil when you're being sued. That's the go-to argument beyond commingling of assets and not having proper accounting, is just, this is a holding company, which is an extension of yourself. So that's the second issue we see, is people putting LLCs in their own name and not having it properly leveled up.
What does that mean? I mean, you're preaching to the choir here, because I'm sitting here running my head through different LLCs I have, and I'm like, which of those just hold real? Well, there's a few of them.
All of them, because you're a real estate, you know, you're a real estate owner, you know, investor, and so you put them into there. That's what they are meant to be holding. You don't operate out of it, because then you're gonna, you know, add more liability into that LLC. So what you need to do is have a management company that owns the LLC. So you need to have a limited partnership at that second level. And that's where, with a limited partnership, it has two classes of ownership, a general partnership share and the, you know, limited minority partnership share. The general partner is the managing member share. That's going to own all of your LLCs. So what your rule of thumb is, take your real estate, put it into an LLC, have the management company own the LLC, and then you're just the managing member of that limited partnership. And then the third layer would be having an asset protection trust on that limited partnership. And then you're just a beneficiary of the trust.
That got really complicated really fast. Is that a fair assessment, or is it just that I don't quite understand it yet?
Just because we haven't broken it down. It's actually really streamlined. It's easier to manage. So when you have a bunch of, like, let's say, for example, I have clients that have 15 LLCs and they're all single member LLCs in their own personal name. Now you're filing 15 tax, you know, filings every year on 15 different, that's a lot of money.
Sure is. My goodness.
Yeah. So what you need to do is clean up your accounting system. First of all those LLCs should be owned by a limited partnership. That way all the K-1s flow directly through into that limited partnership. Now it's just one tax filing with an attachment listing the assets, which are the LLCs owned by it. So now you cleaned up your system. Now you're only paying one tax filing for the year, because it's only one with an additional page. Then you have your business bank account attached to that limited partnership. So now you can do your transactions and all of that. The limited partnership can own non-risky assets, like syndication shares can go directly into that. And then by adding the third layer, it's just an asset protection trust. That trust owns the limited partnership. And so that way, none of this is not in your name. You're just a beneficiary of the trust. Mm-hmm. And now you get the benefit of protection, strong protection with multi-level systems, with a very clean accounting process now that's cleaned up. And it's saving you money instead of paying 15, you know, different tax returns.
Right, right. Yeah, that's one of the things that I think a lot of us run into. It's like, oh, okay, well, how many of these LLCs were one-time use? Say it was an asset you bought that year and sold that year. And then it's like, okay, well, that one's now off the books. But then you still have all these other LLCs that are in play for different, especially when you get into larger assets. You go, okay, well, you know, this is a new company that owns this asset. So that's an interesting way to kind of clean all that up.
It makes it nice. And then, you know, the other big issue I notice, you know, like two other ones is, you know, jurisdiction shopping. People picking the wrong states for the wrong assets in. And generally, they're getting led to like Wyoming or Delaware.
Right.
And like, well, are you a resident of Wyoming? Do you own real estate in Wyoming? And it's generally like no and no. Then what makes you think that Wyoming law would help you if you're a resident of California owning California real estate? Like, you're not just going to take Wyoming law to California lawsuit. It doesn't work like that. The laws of California would apply in that. Or so people don't understand that whatever protection and anonymity you're looking for in Wyoming doesn't just transfer over to another state when you're not. You have no legal nexus there. There's no connection there. And so the lawsuit's always going to come from this asset and the injury in the state where it's at. So if you're owning real estate and it's in California, it's going to come from California. If you're in Florida, it's going to come from Florida. So just keep it simple. Create the LLC in the state where the asset's at, because that's where the lawsuit's going to come from. You're just going to be paying double maintenance tax otherwise. So it's just, you know, a waste of time. And then they're like, oh, well, what about anonymity? And I think people have this false sense of understanding what anonymity actually is. It doesn't mean that you can just disappear and never be found and you're never going to be sued again and you can just ghost a lawsuit. It doesn't work like that. Anonymity works before a lawsuit, so people can't look you up and be like, oh, hey, Sam is the owner of this property. I hate Sam. I'm going to go egg his house and harass him. That's what anonymity does for you. It just makes you private before a lawsuit. But the one thing when you create like a Wyoming or Delaware LLC is you have to have a person service of agent in that state. Their sole job is to say, hey, guess what, Sam? You just got served as your personal service of agent. Here's your lawsuit. Go get a lawyer and get your butt to court. And so anonymity is out the door at that point. You got to show up and the judge is going to order you to do an asset disclosure. And at that point, you have two options. You lie to the judge under oath and commit perjury and go to jail, or you disclose all your assets. So we don't say lie and commit perjury. So you're going to have to disclose all of your assets. There's no anonymity. There's no hiding at that point. So understand, you know, people just don't understand like what anonymity actually it means, and that it goes completely out the door once you're served.
That's wild, because, you know, that's obviously one of the selling points is that, you know, hey, you're going to be anonymous, whatever it is. And you're saying this doesn't do you really any good.
Oh, it's like it only serves for you're not going to be harassed as a business owner, because the whole thing for a Wyoming LLC or Delaware, Wyoming, you know, LLC or any state that has anonymity, you have to have a registered person of service, right, of agent. You have to have it to legitimize the company. And so their sole job, their only purpose is to say, hey, I just got, you know, your LLC got sued. Here's your lawsuit. Right. You don't show up, default judgment against you in the max amount.
Right, which would be awful. So how did jurisdiction shopping even become a thing?
People are looking at charging orders and looking at like, oh, well, I can get protection and stronger charging orders from different states. They're trying to utilize the principle of business disputes in real estate. And what they don't understand is, you being sued from an injury or something happening in real estate is not internal liability, is outside liability. And so it would be like if you and me owned a business together and you and I got in a dispute as co-members of a business and we sued each other, that's internal liability. Now we can use those charging order benefits, you know, to an advantage in a lawsuit. These lawsuits aren't coming from internal liability. They're coming from an outside liability issue, like an injury or torts and damages and stuff like that.
That's wild. So yeah, you're gonna go to court in the state in which this real estate is owned, and yeah, that state law is gonna apply. So it makes no sense. It makes no sense to really do jurisdiction shopping. What are some first steps? Is there a size at which it makes sense to start this planning process, or should we start this on the very first rental property we buy?
The very first rental property, because it's all scalable. You know, I can go from the base level LLC insurance, base level, if you're just starting out. If you're going to buy and become an investor and have a piece of real estate and you have liability, part of your budget has to go into learning how to become a business owner. And that goes into creating an LLC, getting a CPA, and then having insurance. If you can't afford those things, don't buy the real estate, because you're not setting up your system properly. And it doesn't cost much to create an LLC and to get insurance. And CPAs only get paid when they do your taxes at the end of the year. And so that's your entry level spot. When you decide I'm going to go buy a piece of property. Next level up, stage two, the next layer would be the limited partnership. I generally say you do that when you start getting multiple units, you know, like three or four, or if you're in different states, like, you know, you're a California resident and you own a piece of property in Ohio and Texas. Now you got multiple LLCs. We need to start cleaning up your accounting, because it's going to eat into your return on investment otherwise. And so that's when we come in with the limited partnership, multiple states units, or if you're like 250 to 500,000 net, which is, you know, like just the net value of it. The third layer to the asset protection trust, we generally rule of thumb would be floating around 1 million net. That's when you start adding in the third layer with this. And we use a really strong asset protection trust. We like what's called a bridge trust, just because it gives us offshore power and control if we need to, but we can bridge it back to have it classified domestically so you don't have to pay all the crazy upfront costs.
That's interesting. Let's assume, yeah, so you're working in multiple states. I guess when people start syndicating deals, how does this change for the person that is the sponsor of the deal versus the partners, the limited partner passive investors? What does that situation look like?
Yeah, so it's a great question. The passive investor would just put their shares directly into a limited partnership because it's passive. There's right. No risk really for them on it. It just needs to be protected from their own negligence of their life.
Sure.
This one sponsoring the deal, it works through the bottom foundation up. You need to have your LLC, and then the rest of it just works up through the system. And then you should have like an operating company on the side for the deal, so you don't, you know, have more liability spread across the actual investment for the other investors.
Right. Yeah. So you'd have the sponsor of the deal, then of course as an LLC, but then there's an operating company that is the manager.
That's on the side of it, exactly. So that you don't add more liability into the mix of everybody else.
And those would be two obviously separate LLCs.
Correct. Operating and the holding. Yeah.
Right. And then above that, what do we as sponsors do?
The limited partnership that is called an asset management limited partnership.
Okay.
And then your whole system flows just like it would normally. So asset limited partner, you know, the limited partnership into an asset protection trust.
Got it. That's interesting. Yeah, those are things, you know, that's it. That, I guess once somebody gets through that process the first time, it probably becomes a much easier than, you know, the first time through it.
And it's really simple, actually, because when it allows you to scale and grow without eating into your return. And then at the same time, by adding, when you do realize, like, hey, I'm becoming successful and I do need a bridge trust, now you sleep well at night knowing, well, if I ever did have a doomsday scenario and I had to drop domestic compliance, all of my assets are now protected by statutory non-recognition in the Cook Islands. So now, even if I did lose in court and had a $5 million judgment against me, it's worthless. And so that's when you can come in and say, hey, we'll give you a penny on the dollar, go away. You're never going to touch us. And this is like over 40 years of case law supporting it all the way up through the Supreme Courts. And so like you have this famous Anderson case, the Grant case, Slow case, you know, and these people, I don't advocate what they did, but I just use these as a massive learning examples is you're talking about, you know, tax evasion of like $36 million. You're talking about Ponzi schemes and the assets just sat there safe. And the government, the man who can afford to sue you in the Cook Islands with all the statutory hurdles on like front, you know, like you can't take your U.S. attorney with you there. You have to front all the court costs, fly in a judge from New Zealand, 1 year statute of limitations, burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And if you lose, you pay. So like insane statute, you know, insane hurdles just to get you sued there. The government has a hard time even arguing cases there and they don't win. So the assets in really extreme bad cases, people doing really bad stuff, which I don't advocate for, still have their assets safe and sound.
That's fascinating. Brian, let's jump into the final four here.
Yeah.
If you were to give one piece of advice to us as investors, what is that one piece of advice?
Don't be afraid. You know, like you're going to fail, you know, and so I would just say take the failure as learning opportunities and don't let it stop you. But don't ever fall into analysis paralysis or let a bad deal stop you. Just learn from it, grow, move on, keep going.
I love it. What's one thing you're currently doing to stay on top of your game?
I'm always reading. I love reading. And so I read like 3 books a week and whether like in my profession, out of my profession and personal development. And so as long as you're doing in, you know, like what you do, learning something new and then working on yourself, you're always going to be at the top.
What's one thing you're currently doing to make the world a better place?
I do a lot of keynote speaking. So personal life coaching, because people are like, oh, you're a lawyer, you know, and you work with really rich people. What should I invest in? I don't give them the answer of what they're investing in. I say, invest in yourself first, because if you're a train wreck, all of your stuff is going to go south anyway. So let's get you, you know, your train point in the right direction, which is yourself, getting rid of toxicity in your life. Once your mind is right for success, then success comes.
Right. I love that. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do we do that?
Yeah, you can just send me an email, Brian, B-R-I-A-N at btblegal.com, or jump on my website, www.btblegal.com. And I have tons of educational videos and information. And I have it set up for like even like a legal resource with a bunch of case law that people can jump through.
That's awesome, Brian. Thank you so much for your time. This was super informative. Do appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.